The We Are SC Podcast 2014 season kickoff edition is here. Gary Paskowitz, and joined this year by two former offensive linemen for the Trojans. Jeremy Hogue played 1993 to 1996 on the 1996 Rose Bowl team that beat Northwestern. And Mike Lamb, 1983, a couple years before that, and blocked for two Heisman Trophy winners during his time at USC. So let's get things started here with just an opening thought from both of you as we're sitting here starting to get ready for the season. Jeremy, a quick opening thought from you.
Well, my opening thought is it's great to be off sanctions. I think it's great to have some energy around the program with Sark and where we're sort of taking things. I think there's a lot of excitement around this season, but I think the future, you know, 2015, 16, 17, to me, are very bright for the Trojans, but looking forward to 2014.
I think it's interesting when you look at USC and what people are anticipating with the change, and I think Steve Sarkisian is clearly somebody that understands this conference, somebody with head coaching experience, and I know there were a lot of doubters when he was named the head coach, but I think that the recruiting class that he's put together, I think that you probably witnessed some buy-in from the players already from Steve Sarkisian. And then the other part is defensively where this team is and the talent that is there. I think they've got the ability to do some things to surprise some people. I'm wildly excited about this edition of the Trojans.
Yeah, I think this season kind of fit perfectly in terms of turning a page, like Jeremy said, with the sanctions ending, a new coach, you know, so much excitement around the program. It seems like there is a real breath of fresh air as you're getting ready to start this season. You sense it from the players. I know you mentioned the buy-in that they've given to Sarkisian. There's no doubt about that. And so when you look at that optimism, it really is tangible when you're around the program right now. And I think so much of that does belong to Sark and the energy that he has infused. He's different from Pete. I know a lot of people are saying, oh, this is just Pete Carroll redone. I don't think so in any stretch of the form. The one thing that gets me about Sark, and I'd like to get your guys' opinion on this, is it really strikes me this is a guy who's very comfortable in his own skin. He went off and learned how to be a head coach somewhere else before he comes back here. Very confident in the way he does things and the plan he wants to implement. I think that's one of the things that's really striking me right now is how many good moves he's making because he has a plan that he wants to implement.
I'll start and just say I think he's a really, really smart guy. I think he was that way in college. If you listen to his, you know, Norm Chow and others talk about coaching him at BYU and, you know, went off in business, came back into coaching, has been very successful, you know, all his way through and highly regarded as a very, very smart guy with his own plan. Like you said, Gary, he's not trying to be Pete Carroll. He's not trying to be some other coach. He's got his own identity of what he wants to do. I think it's, you know, USC has yet to really see that. We see him at Washington and other places. But I think, you know, 2-3 years from now, we're going to have a very keen sense of what it means for a Steve Sarkisian program. And I think he's, you know, we're watching that being built in front of us right now. And but you're exactly right. I think the way he does things, the way he goes about his business, both on the field and off the field, is very uniquely him. It's not Pete Carroll. It's not anybody else. And, you know, he's putting a stamp on this program, and like Mike said and others, what he was able to do in a short period of time, getting the buy-in from these players that have been through so much change and so much upheaval going through last year with what happened with Ed O and everybody else, and then, you know, the way he put that recruiting class together, you know, I still think, you know, as much excitement as there is, you know, we've got a depleted roster and he's got to deal with that this year, but the future, I think, is very, very bright around these Trojans.
You know, and I wouldn't freak out about that, you know, saying somebody's going to copy somebody because, you know, Jeremy, this is coaching and people copy, and I say that in as a term of endearment. If you have the chance to copy some of the things that Norm Chow taught you and utilize them later on in life, what's wrong with that? And if you have a chance to take some of the experiences that you got with Pete, I don't know if there's anything wrong with that. And I think that is what Steve is going to do. That the impression that I get from him is that he has picked things up. You know, he saw Chip Kelly's offense, and there were some parts of that I think that he wanted to integrate. And so he has been somebody that is, as you said, smart guy, sees what's successful, takes from that, and every great coach that I have been around has been that. And I would add this. When I look at head coaches, I don't know whether it's just having a nose for it or whatever it is, but this is a guy that I see success coming to. This is somebody that understands it. This is somebody that I think is a people person. And Jeremy, Gary, you guys both understand, you know, what I'm talking about. If you are going to be a successful head coach, You have got to be able to manage people effectively in your coaching staff, but you've also got to be a people person that your players want to play for, that they feel as though you sincerely want them to succeed. And that's really the sense that I get that Steve has promoted so far as the head coach of USC.
I think that's, I mean, to finish that point, I think that's exactly what Pat Hayden and J.K. McKay and Steve Lopes and the others in the athletic department saw in that interview process that, you know, to be honest, a lot of people didn't see. A lot of the media, a lot of fans and alumni didn't know this stuff about Steve. There was a lot of criticism when he was fired and Edo didn't get the job. But I think they sort of had this sense that just wait, everyone's going to get a chance to see this guy and they're going to see it for themselves.
I think one of the points you made is that, you know, getting that buy-in right away from the players, those who weren't around the program don't understand how raw everything was when Edo got let go. That was a touchy situation, and I think Sark handled it perfectly. You know, he didn't try to force himself on the program. He just let it come to him, and he let that relationship with the players develop naturally, because like you say, he does have a real good way with the players, so that was going to happen. And then I think as far as the fans, what happened on signing day with getting those three high-profile commitments, that scored a lot of big points for Sark. And so by the time you've gone through spring ball and into now, things are really positive. I want to talk really quick, though, about, you know, what he did at Washington. And I know there's some people saying, hey, he was barely a 500 coach up there. You know, he didn't really get to beat up on Oregon and Stanford. But if you look at where he was when he took a program over that was winless before he got there, mm-hmm. and what he did in 5 years, I know you guys can speak to it. There was growth within that program.
There was substantial growth in that program. I mean, like you said, they were winless before he got there. Their roster was really decimated. I mean, if you look at Washington in the past, the teams that Mike played against, the teams that I played against, I mean, I played against the Washington team that was a split national champion in the early 90s, and Don James and those defenses and their personnel and consistently putting guys in the NFL. I mean, Washington, you know, has been replaced in the Pacific Northwest by Oregon, and that program has not been able to get the talent level to really sustain itself and compete at the highest levels. But Sark was knocking on the door there, and if he had 2 or 3 years more there, I think he ends up, you know, having more and more success up there, and he certainly, you know, laid a good foundation for, you know, the program with Peterson that's coming in there now. But, I take my hat off to him. Everything's relative. You know, if you sit there and you say, we needed to hire someone who's won a national championship at a place like Washington, you know, that's not happening very much. I mean, that wasn't what we had to choose from. He's the right guy. He got in that program, turned it around. I think his success there and what he did there was more than adequate for sort of building his resume for now coming to this next step at USC.
Well, the other part about Washington is that's a team that probably started to build its brand defensively more than offensively. And you think of Steve Sarkisian. Don't you guys think of offense? I mean, he's a quarterback,
sure.
Right? And you think of him as a quarterback guru. So, you know, part of being a head coach is, you know, giving your staff the autonomy to go do their thing. And I really liked, you know, the brand of football that they were playing. You know, Jeremy, you alluded to it. And, you know, there were, in the day, you know, there were a couple of games that you knew were going to be physical, and that was Notre Dame and that was Washington. And, you know, and I think that goes back to having those types of players. You got into that fact a little bit about, you know, where the recruiting was. And it has been a little bit tougher at Washington. It's never really recovered, you know, from what went down in the 90s, and they've never gotten back to Don James. You know, it's almost like the specter of Bear Bryant over the University of Alabama for years and years and years and years. Guys tried to get it done, but it didn't necessarily happen. And, you know, not to say that it's not going to with what's going on there, but the point that we're trying to make is about Steve, what he did at Washington. He was a head coach. He's been in this conference. This conference, in my opinion, is probably the best from top to bottom of anything in college football. When you look at the head coaches and you look at the talent right now. Now, that's not really how I like to define a conference. I care about the top one or two teams in a conference, and clearly the SEC is still going to be the king of the mountain when it comes to that. But when you look at this, what it's taken to compete, it's not easy to get wins. Oregon was a gimme back in the day. They're not a gimme anymore. Washington State was a gimme. They're not a gimme anymore. So it talks to the job that he's got to do right now at USC, and I think we all know what the expectations are.
Well, let's talk about one of the biggest, changes that he's going to be bringing on the offensive side of the ball. and that is the introduction of the up-tempo style. He is insisting on saying this is still going to be a run-first offense. It's going to be a pro-style offense. It's just that the quarterback is going to be in the shotgun a little more, and it's going to be faster pace than anything that's been seen in the Coliseum to this point. We all know the three of us on this phone call were raised in the I formation tailback system at USC, well versed in it. You guys both played for John Robinson. Talk about your thoughts on what this offense is going to be and why people shouldn't be so freaked out about the changes they're going to see.
I think there's a real misnomer out there about what this offense is and what it's going to be. And if you go back and look at the numbers at Washington, clearly they ran the football, and it's a mindset. You hear that from coaches all the time, but I think it's absolutely true. You got to be committed to the run. I mean, I can just remember you alluded to Coach Robinson, you know, saying things, and he might have said this to you too, Jeremy. You know, you got to have the guts to punt the football once in a while, you know, if you're going to run. You know, you can't get away from what you're going to do. They have put together something here that is an offense that is simple. It is effective. They're going to get more time to be on the field. It wears down the defense. But it all comes down to this. It's not the offense. It's the guy who really is behind it that is putting together the framework and calling the plays. That's Steve. I'm going to take him at his word. I don't know about you guys, but I'm going to take him at his word right now that he's going to run the football. He said it to me. I'm sure he said it to you. I'm sure you've heard him say it to the press and say it to people that ask him. He's saying it, and I'm not going to make him out to being somebody that's disingenuous when he says that.
No, I completely agree, and that's his history, like you said, Mike. I mean, that's what he did in Washington. They ran the ball. Their tailback is, you know, on an NFL roster right now, had one of the best seasons of any tailback in college football last year. You look at tempo, to me, one of the big criticisms, Gary knows this well, we talked about it a lot last year, was the lack of tempo that our more traditional offense played with last year under Lane Kiffin, and even, to be honest with you, even after he left, you know, the lack of tempo, the lack of getting up to the ball, playing quick, going and attacking, you know, even Mike, when you played and I played and we ran John Robinson's more traditional offense, we broke that huddle, we got up to the ball, and we got after people. Yeah. And there just seems to be a sense in some in college football that are playing a more traditional style that it's a little slow, and defenses are attacking them as opposed to the other way around. I think one of the things about this tempo is it allows guys who are athletes, big athletic linemen, big tight ends, you know, tailbacks, everybody, to get up the line of scrimmage and take it to a defense. And I love that about this offense.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you say tempo, I don't know if everybody understands, you know, what the tempo is. The tempo is, you know, you're moving quicker between plays, and it's something that you do in practice. But when you sit there and think about it from a quarterback's perspective, when you're Cody Kessler and you come up and you've now asked to be this, you know, more of a point guard than anything else, you come up and you're looking to run first. And if it's there, you take it. And if it's not, I mean, everything in this offense is, you know, something that you see and you react. So that old "we're going to make adjustments at halftime" thing just doesn't hold in this. This is, I'm making adjustments when I come to the line.
Right.
And your first option is to hand the ball off and pound on somebody, and I'm looking forward to seeing that. You know, the more we're talking about, the more excited I'm getting about Saturday.
Yeah, the one question you have when you do this is you don't just want to play fast, but you've got to play sharp. And this personnel group, we've got some young guys on the offensive line,
yeah,
you know, people that are getting used to this. You know, are we going to play fast or are we going to play sharp? And we need to do both. We got to play sharp and really take it to a defense. You know, if we're not that way, it can be a very quick three plays and punt the ball, and then our defense is on the field for a long time. So, you know, you hope that, you know, they've had, and I know everyone says, you know, the spring football was a great spring, that they have kept the playbook more simple, and that Cody's doing a great job of sort of managing and being that point guard like you talked about. If we see that success, you know, in week one against Fresno State, that they are playing not just fast but sharp, you know, that's what we're going to need all season long.
I think the great thing is that there are certainly the skill athletes all the way across the board. I love what we've seen in camp with the way that Sark is calling plays for these running backs. He really does have a varied group that do a lot of things well. And Mike, I love what you said. It's all this, but the guy behind the scenes calling the plays, that's what so much is going to be. And I have a lot of, you know, hope for Sark in that regard. You've got receivers in Aguilar. You've got a good tight end in Telfer. All the skill position guys are there. But talk about the offensive line, you guys, with this new system. What are the pros? What are the cons? And with there, you're probably going to be looking at four new starting spots, including the potential of two true freshmen on the line this Saturday. What's the good? What's the bad?
Well, I think anytime you're starting freshmen, it's not ideal. And so, you know, what you'll hear in the press and what you'll hear the coaches say is, you know, oh, this guy's fantastic. He's going to start as a true freshman. And the reality of it is we don't have depth. We don't have a lot of options. So we're having to play a true freshman. I mean, we never want to do that, you know. So, I mean, Mike knows that well. I know that well. We'd love to have, you know, another year with these guys sitting behind some great veterans for them to grow up and hit the weight room and put on, you know, size and athleticism, get their bodies right, get some experience playing against bigger, faster personnel to be ready to go. We don't have that luxury. So, you know, while the coaches rave about him, and I know, you know, J.K. McKay, I talked to him, he said, you know, Toa Lobodon's going to start every game that he's ever at USC right before he goes to the NFL. They love the guy. It doesn't matter. He's still a freshman. And my big question is how quickly can this group, with great coaching, sort of grow up, play as a unit, mature, and start really playing well? And you don't have a lot of time. I mean, second game of the year at Stanford is going to be a test. Those guys are deep, they're big, they're physical, they're going to be, I don't care how many guys went to, you know, left their program last year, they're loaded. They've been recruiting those guys in the trenches, you know, better than any other program in the Pac-12. You know, it's going to be coming at you in week two. I hope we play well week one. I hope we stay healthy because we've really got five guys plus one reserve, and, you know, I hope we grow up fast, like I said.
You know, Gary, I think you really asked two questions there. You know, and one is the tempo, how's that going to affect the offensive line? The other part was the freshman part of it. And I think that when you get into somebody that's inexperienced, you're going to take a couple of games to kind of figure out what the college game is about. And every time you make that transition from one level to other, high school to college in this case, or college to the National Football League, it's just a different game. And it probably takes a couple of three games for you to, you know, go through the sink or swim thing. And, yeah, you know, I can play with these guys, and not only can I play, I'm going to be pretty good. So there's no way to replicate that. You can scrimmage, do whatever. So there are going to be problems. And I think Jeremy's point is totally accurate. Here's the other part. You know, you talk about the tempo and offensive linemen, and traditionally when you talk about wearing someone down, you're talking about physically beating them up. This is going to be different because they're going to be more plays that you're going to be able to run on offense. And something that might concern me a little bit is Damian Mama, and, you know, where he was physically and where he is physically. He's lost weight, but it's going to be one of those things where, and I know that, you know, Jeremy's going to shudder when I say this because I think about it. You know, you want linemen that are right around 300 pounds, you know, 310, something like that, which, you know, back in the day was pretty big, but now that's, you know, pretty athletic. He's going to have, you know, both of these things that he's going to have to deal with. He's going to be inexperienced. He's a little bit of a bigger kid, and, you know, it's going to take some time. So that's really, to me, going to be the key. I'm going to watch him, see how he is in the third quarter and towards the fourth quarter, and how the tempo affects him and the rest of the young guys.
And then what do you guys, it's the thought of rotating offensive linemen. Sark has mentioned it several times. There's going to be more plays. If you're going to be talking 80, 85 plays a game at a fast pace, you rotate a lot on the outside, but not a lot of teams rotate offensive linemen. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I think it's just another telling thing of exactly what we're talking about, and the fact that this is a line that doesn't have the maturity and the chemistry and everything to say, here's our five guys, let's put them out there and they can go. And even the point like Mike made, I mean, a guy like Damian Mama is really not in shape for this offense yet. As great as, you know, everyone hopes he is, and he's unbelievably physical and strength-wise and everything is fantastic. You know, I mean, he's to run that many plays and have all of them be sort of peak plays isn't going to happen. So I think, you know, getting guys in the game and rotating, to me, it's not a big deal. If you're an offensive lineman and you take a series off and another guy comes in at right guard or left guard or wherever it ends up being and runs a series or two, as long as that guy, you know, from a mental standpoint is tuned in to what's going on the sidelines and adjustments that are being made and what blitzes they might be seeing or any of that sort of stuff, not a big deal. I don't think it's going to impact them.
Well, Jeremy, I might disagree a little bit in this because I always felt comfortable next to a guy that I knew what he was going to do. And I'm a little bit concerned about bringing in one guy, like bringing in a guard. Maybe if you brought in, and this is purely theoretical, so I'm just kind of throwing it at you here. You know, what if you brought in a guard and a tackle and they played together, or you brought in the center guard and tackle, or whatever it is, so that they were kind of comfortable with doing that? And I don't know the answer to it. You know, I'm really looking at this. When you say this is something different and new, and it really is, how do you go about rotating somebody? Because on the defensive line, and, you know, they've rotated defensive lines for years and years and years, so it's not a big deal. But you don't work with, you know, the same cohesion that you do on the offensive line. I'm a little bit concerned about that. So you're more comfortable with it than I am. But as you watch this game against Fresno State, and you're thinking ahead, you can as a broadcaster, you can as a player, to Stanford, you know, that's going to be something I think that's going to be a key thing to watch, the growth of this and how they do rotate those guys.
Well, I'll just say this is in response. I think I'm okay with it because I know they don't feel like their five guys are really set yet, mature yet. You know, if you did have those five guys, you wouldn't be doing it. But if you don't have those five guys and you're worried about things like injuries, do we have the right guy? Do we want to make sure that this, you know, backup guy gets experience because we're going to need him? And, you know, you never know. He may end up being the starter in week two because he's playing better than another guy. I'm not worried about it from, you know, from that standpoint in the early weeks of the season, in terms of some drop off between one unit that's in there and all of a sudden this other guy comes in and there's huge mistakes. I think they're all sort of at the same level right now. And, you know, the question is at what point in the season do we end up getting five guys or maybe six guys that can really play together as that cohesive unit that you talk about? And if you sort of look at this schedule and how it lines up, I think you sort of want to be there towards, you know, end of October.
But is it, am I the only one that's a little bit scared about this experiment that's going on right now? And that's what it is. You know, you're trying to figure out, you've got true freshmen that are going to go here. You know, you've got a different type of offense. And I know the coaching staff's got to be like, oh, I wonder how this thing is going to go. Because
I guess my only thing to say is I'm just as scared as the five guys that are in there if you didn't rotate anybody. So it's sort of like, whether you throw another guy in there or not doesn't change my fear level.
Trying to keep an open mind on it, and you got one week to figure it out, guys. Then Stanford's coming up in 2 weeks, so get it figured out by then. I think one guy that's really going to be key to watch is Andre Walker. He, you know, coming off that ankle injury, he didn't get really much reps early on, and Sark was pretty open about you know, basically calling him out, saying the doctors have cleared him. He needs to get out here, and the last week or so, Andre's been out there. Still at a reserve. They're looking at him at guard spots. They're looking at both tackle spots. I think if he gets another week of work in right now, I think before too long, hey, those 18 career starts and that experience of him, that's going to play a role somehow in getting him in there. The two freshmen are nice, but somehow my guess is before too long, Andre Walker is going to be a big part of that rotation.
Well, you and I have talked about it over the years, Gary, ever since Andre's gotten here, and obviously came in as this heralded guy out of Ohio that was a superstar recruit we were going to get, and to me, it's always been about the mental part of the game with Andre, and it's not even necessarily assignment football. It's just the mental part of being ready and aggressive and sort of the desire and all that sort of stuff that you sort of get intimated by the comments that Sark has made and sort of calling him out in the fact that, you know, you take a guy like Andre Walker with his talent and you take a guy like Max Turek and give him Max Turek's attitude, and you've got one heck of a football player. And, you know, can we find a way, if this coaching staff find a way to bring that out of Andre? You know, there are times when you've seen him over even the last two seasons where when he's on and playing well and he's pulling around and leading, blocking, I mean, he can physically do some fantastic things as an offensive lineman. The question's just a matter of that, you know, can he stay with it? Can he stay healthy? Does he have the desire and the energy and the passion to make it happen? And I hope, you know, this team and this offensive line, which is the question mark of this team right now, they need that guy. And, you know, you hope that Sark makes that happen.
But can I make this point? You know, the 18 starts that he's had in the past holds no weight whatsoever with a brand new staff. Are we in agreement on that?
True. Oh, yeah.
So it's completely what have you done for me lately? So it's yeah, you've got experience, you've done these things, but you know, I've got you out of practice right now, and I've got to see it. So and I don't blame the coaches, and there isn't anything built up in escrow, you know, what you did in the past, if you're not going to do it now. So and I mean, that's a recurring, you know, nightmare that I still have to this day. It, you know, you guys are worried that, you know, you've got a lab you haven't finished and you're not going to, you know, graduate, right? So I have one that, you know, I come back and I'm not starting, you know, in my senior year because of some situation like this, and he's got to be living through that right now. He's got to figure out a way to get back on the team and get into good graces here. And if you guys are implying that there's been a lack of effort or whatever that is, now's the time. You know, there's no other chance, because if you put in these physical specimens that are freshmen, once they start playing and they get the groove of it, there's not going to be a chance.
Yep. Exactly what Sark said, Mike. Yeah, exactly what Sark was saying. And let's put it this way, in the early part of fall camp when Andre was out there, have you guys ever seen an offensive lineman in a yellow jersey during practice?
My laughter is my answer. No, I've never seen that.
There you go. Okay, let's flip it over to the defensive side of the ball. I think there's so much talk about the offense, and Mike, you made the point as we were preparing for this call that the defense is just as interesting, some of the changes. I'll be honest, last year, especially once things transitioned to Orgeron and the new staff with Pendergast, I thought the defense played terrific. The fact is they ended up number one defense, total defense in the conference. What do you see from Wilcox coming in on what he's going to try to do?
Well, he is a guy that does things a little bit differently. If you think back to Washington and Shaq Thompson and the role that he played was, you know, where is he at? Go back in the day of certain players, you always had to know where they were. So I think you're going to probably see that to confuse and intimidate some of the opponents. The other part of this is, I'm going to make an observation here. Ohio State, which lost their quarterback and everybody's starting to count them out, has a really, really good front seven. USC has a really, really good front seven. And I think because you have that, you're going to have a chance to challenge some people and do some things, and there's no need to feel as though you're intimidated by anybody and that there are games that you cannot win. And clearly, Leonard Williams is going to be at the heart of that thing. So you think that Justin Wilcox has not, you know, sat there every time the guy sits down to have a lemonade, every time that, you know, he's trying to figure out what kind of salad dressing to have on his salad, he's thinking about Leonard Williams and ways to utilize him up front there. This is a guy that can line up anywhere on the defensive line, and if you think back to some of the greats in the National Football League that were able to do that and what that enabled a defensive coordinator to do, the creativity can be unlimited with the way that they want to get pressure on somebody. And I'm not talking about blitzing. I'm talking about you've got a couple of guys on your defensive line that can always have to be accounted for, that must be occupied by at least one guy. Man, it opens up what you can do. That, to me, is the most exciting aspect of what's going to happen with USC football this year. It's not this no huddle. It's not the hurry up. It's none of that. This, to me, is going to be exciting. And if you want to harken back to when Pete Carroll turned things around, you know where he turned it around. It's when he started shutting people down defensively. When I look at this defense, it excites me.
Yeah, I will say this. What you're sort of describing, Mike, and is, you know, we think about offensive coaches all the time saying, you know, hey, let me find a matchup. You know, let me come to the line of scrimmage. Let's find a matchup. And then I'm going to exploit this cornerback over here because I'm going to motion to the other side and I'm going to have Nelson Aguilar one-on-one with this freshman corner and we're going to go to town. You know, Justin Wilcox coaches defense like that. And where he's looking at that offensive, whether it's the offensive line, whether it's a fullback, whether whatever it is, where they're saying, okay, we know what they're doing. Now let's find our matchup. And let's take Leonard Williams and put him over here against this young offensive lineman where he's going to be single blocked given their scheme. Or let's take Sua Cravens and let's bring him up here where they can't account for him. And, you know, that to me is a different way of coaching defense that, you know, I hope we see great success out of. I still, to this day, you know, going into this season, and as much success, Gary, as we did have last year with the number one ranked defense in the Pac-12, you know, there are some teams like Oregon we did not play. We did not play Oregon. We did not play Washington. And when we played Arizona State and UCLA, we had a really tough time. And what I'm excited about with this defense is how he talks about the use of safety. So, you know, how he uses Sua Cravens, how he uses Gerald Bowman, Coleman, Leon McQuay, those guys, I think, you know, how he uses those safeties behind that front seven that I think is going to be as good as any front seven in the conference. You know, can we, you know, I look at that ASU game at home in the middle, sort of in the middle of the season, and then I look at obviously UCLA at the end. You know, can we defensively have success against those teams with those, you know, mobile quarterbacks that can still throw the ball? You know, Jalen Strong at ASU is going to be a guy that's, you know, tough as ever for our secondary to stop. You know, those, there's going to be some of those matchups that I look to. I think we match up great against teams like Stanford. We saw it last year. You put your big boys up there, we'll put our big boys up there. It may be a low-scoring game, but at the end of the day, we're in it. You know, can we stay in it, and can we really start shutting down teams like, you know, ASU, UCLA, you know, to the extent we hopefully make it to a Pac-12 championship against someone like an Oregon or someone like that? That's where I want to see this defense get to. I know that is the whole premise of Justin Wilcox, is competing with those types of sort of new offenses that we're seeing across the Pac-12. I am very excited about seeing it. I love the personnel. I love the scheme. And I love how he thinks about, like you were talking about, Mac, those matchups. Find us some matchups where we can make some difference-making plays on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and that mentality is to attack. You know, when you say you're looking for the matchup, that means you're going to attack that offense. And you know this from you know, the flip side of it. You hate those defenses. You know, you think about how much time you spend on protection and all the extra man hours that goes along with that. But, you bring up Sua Cravens and, you know, the role he might play in the safeties. Gary, I know you were at practice on Tuesday morning, and the story about Josh Shaw, obviously one that everybody is very aware of, and the heroic effort and what went on there and the sacrifice he has made. But that brings up the question with the corners, what's going to happen there? So what do you know?
Well, this morning at practice, Chris Hawkins moved into the starting role in place of Josh, and that's not a big deal at all, because Kevon Seymour was banged up with a stomach issue early in camp, and so Chris was running with the ones pretty much the first half of camp and doing a great job. He's a redshirt freshman ready to go, so you'll have Hawkins and Seymour as your starters, and then Adoree Jackson will be the third corner in there. And guys, Adoree has been every bit of what you would have hoped he would be coming into camp. So that was one spot where it was nice to have a little bit of depth losing Josh Hurts. You don't want to lose a senior captain ever. But there are some bodies back there. And it's one of the things I'll go into that I really like off what you guys are saying. You mentioned Justin Wilcox thinking about defense while he's having his cereal, while he's getting dressed in the morning. I love this staff. I describe them all the time. They're gym rats. These guys love talking ball. They can't wait after practice to get back up in the film room and start breaking things down and do it. It's one of my favorite things about these guys. When Jabari Ruffin went down at outside linebacker, all of a sudden it's like, okay, let's look at moving Sua up. Let's look at, you know, can we flip J.R. Tavai over? Can we flip Scott Felix over, the former Scott Starr? They were looking at all kind of different options to see what could work, and they're doing that all over the place. I really like that about this staff.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see so much just, you know, and I look at the schedule. I know that's something we want to talk about. You know, we're going to see so much very quickly, right? I mean, Fresno State, not a bad team. Maybe, you know, they don't have the quarterback, obviously, that they had last year. But still, you know, a really good program, consistently good. They love coming to the Coliseum. They'll travel a bunch of people. They'll show up, and they'll be rooting on Fresno State. That'll be a great opening matchup for us. And then week two at Stanford, I mean, right out of the gate, you know, a team that many are obviously continuing to pick to win the conference. You know, then on the road, Boston College, then, you know, it doesn't slow down. These schedules in the Pac-12, really across the whole conference, are so consistently tough. Mike talked about the strength of the conference. We're going to see what this coaching staff brings. There's a lot of teams out there have a lot of talent, a lot of depth. They do what they do over and over and over again. We're going to see so many different types of offenses, different types of defenses with consistently good programs. You're going to see this coaching staff in action. So everything you were just talking about, Gary, these guys being gym rats, I mean, going from 1 week to another in this conference is like going from one completely different sport almost in the way some of these offenses are created. I mean, the difference between a Stanford and, you know, an Arizona State, the difference between, I mean, it's just night and day. So, I mean, the coaching staffs better be gym rats, and they better be in there, because we're going to see it. And we're going to see it like never before in this conference, over and over and over again. The depth and the strength and the, you know, the parity is really unbelievable.
Well, you know, Gary,
Mike, you ever seen better coaching in the conference?
Well, I mean, in this conference, absolutely not. You know, it's astonishing when you start to think about who is in here. You know, Chris Peterson comes over. This guy who's, you know, won BCS games. You think about, you know, what's going on at Oregon there. Now you've got somebody, that's new, but, you know, came in internally, knows that program, understands it. Jim Moore, how long was he in the National Football League? I mean, there's not the easy outs that you had in the past. But I want to go back to the point that you made about when somebody goes down. It's definitely going to test the creativity of this coaching staff on both sides of the football, because the one thing that you have, sanctions are over, and it's the last time you're going to hear me talk about it, but the point has to be made. You don't have the type of depth that maybe you would love to have, and you are going to have some players that are a little more flexible. And let me make a parallel to the National Football League. Somebody that I think has done this better than anybody has been Bill Belichick. And when you think about the Patriots and where guys have got to take on different roles, you know, in the National Football League, you move somebody from receiver to DB, and it's successful. You've got guys that come in and do things from a tight end position, and where they're essentially becoming a wide receiver. The slot guy is effectively becoming the tight end. That type of stuff is going to have to happen this year, because there's going to be something that happens. The coaches are going to have to figure out. You guys talked about tight games. It's going to be a very tight conference, but this is a team, in my opinion, that if they have a modicum of health, can compete to win this conference.
Well, I think the word modicum is the highlight of the day. Good luck there, Mike. That's a big word right there. Guys, I think this was a really good first edition look at what's going on as we close things up. Let's just let's get a final thought from each of you on what you're looking forward to. Jeremy, let's start with you.
I look at the schedule, and you sort of, to me, you sort of break it down into three parts. So you've got these opening three games, and then a bye, and right out of the gate, Fresno State, Stanford, Boston College, with two of them on the road, but obviously that big, big Stanford game, the one conference game of the three, right there is your second game. I really like our chances of going up to Palo Alto and getting a win there. As I said before, I think we actually match up really, really well with teams like Stanford, big physical teams. If we come out of that with a win and then can go on the road and get a win in Boston College and then get a little bit of a bye, I think the buzz around this program is going to be phenomenal, nationally, not just locally, but nationally. Then you've got these middle six games where it's 6 weeks in a row of football against some really good teams like ASU and Arizona and others, but also some of those middle-of-the-pack teams. But again, as Mike and I have been talking about, there's no middle of the pack. All these teams are good. You know, going on the road at Utah, going on the road at even a Washington State are games that scare you. If you're there and you're not healthy and it's your sixth week in a row and your second road game in a row and you aren't completely focused, you think those teams don't want to get up and bite you? I mean, that's what we've seen historically over the last decade of USC. It's been games like that that have bitten the Trojans. You know, if you can make it through that stretch, you know, successfully, then you get another bye and you come home with a Thursday night game with Cal and then UCLA and Notre Dame to finish. And, you know, what a better way to finish the season. I, like Mike, am incredibly, incredibly excited about the way the schedule sets up for us to have some early success, get some maturity around this offensive line, you know, as we all say, stay healthy, and then go towards that home stretch of the season playing for a Pac-12 championship.
If you go to the end of the season, like Jeremy just pointed out, and you're talking about UCLA and Notre Dame, I'm going to make a prediction right now. You will be talking about a defensive football team in the USC Trojans. The novelty of the offense will be long gone, and it won't be a point of discussion, and you're going to be discussing what's happening on the defensive side of the football, because that's what's going to carry them through. That's what's going to help them win those tight games that you're talking about. I think that Steve Sarkisian understands that. Smart guy, head coach material. He's the right guy for the job. He's going to turn loose Justin Wilcox to have this defense really be a stalwart in the Pac-12. So I'm calling my shot when we are doing this the week of the UCLA game and when we're talking about it with Notre Dame. The conversation will center around the defense of the USC Trojans.
Nothing wrong with that. I will just choose to say I am looking forward to Saturday just for what it's going to be, just an enjoyment day at the Coliseum. Every now and then you get an opener against a team you should beat, and you're going to see a lot of players and a lot of stuff is going to go right. I am hoping and anticipating that's what happens on Saturday. One of the biggest things that I think is going to take place when the captains walk out to the middle of the field, and Josh Shaw is one of those captains, you are going to hear a loud ovation raining down from that Coliseum crowd for him. That one's going to be interesting. And then hopefully it's a day full of good football for the Trojans. Should be a lot of fun. Well, thanks, guys. This was a good opening week. For Mike Lamb and Jeremy Hogue, this is Gary Paskowitz. You're listening to the We Are SC podcast.